Hello and welcome to the programme which looks at the Holy Land. I am Paul Calvert. Joel 2 verse 25 from the New King James Bible says this: "So I will restore to you the years that the swarming locust has eaten, the crawling locust, the consuming locust, and the chewing locust, my great army which I sent among you." I'm with Tristan Hall from Christian Friends of Israel. Now, Tristan, you've just recently been down to Kibbutz Be'eri. Have you developed a relationship with the residents down there?
Hi, Paul. Nice to see you again. Well, yes, we've been, like many, we've been most concerned about the residents of Kibbutz Be'eri, as all the southern kibbutzim as well. After the terrible things that befell them in October, we were blessed to have some personal contacts too that were living in Be'eri. So we've been keen to be a presence with them as much as we can, to show them that we care about what's happening and about the future of the people there, the future of the kibbutz. As you probably heard, Kibbutz Be'eri was really the worst hit, amongst the worst hit of the southern kibbutzim. They were decimated on October the 7th. They're calling it the Kibbutz Be'eri Massacre, and that's exactly what it was. They lost about 10% of their residents on October the 7th, so well over 100 people. And on top of that, there was about over 20 soldiers that also fell defending it in the days that ensued. And it's a mess down there. It was Be'eri, the etymology speaks of fountains, or somebody from a place of a fountain. And this, interestingly, was the father of the Hosea the prophet, was called Be'eri. It was beautiful down there, absolutely stunning. They created a beautiful oasis in a very, very hot climate, and it's just been decimated. So now we need to be in solidarity with these precious people as they seek to have the courage to look ahead.
Now a foundation stone of their new neighborhood was laid. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, we were just absolutely just really giving thanks to God for making these people so resilient. Now, there's a word that's so often overused now, especially in the corporate world, but this is what resilience is all about. In the face of such adversity, to pluck up courage, and really I think it's really given to them from on high myself, this courage and hope to start building again. It didn't happen overnight. The kibbutz was founded in 1948 and had been developed over many decades. If you go down there, you can see the trees. They are very well established. It will take a long time to restore the parts of it that have been so damaged. Essentially, big swathes of the kibbutz were decimated by rockets, shelling, fire, arson, and some of them have been completely, basically destroyed. Many of them have been partially destroyed, and the integrity of the buildings has been compromised to an extent that it needs to be demolished. So particularly with the fires that were started, many people were literally burned to death in their homes. And for other people whose homes were not as badly damaged, and some of the homes have remained unscathed, and yet, some people, understandably, don't want to return to the homes in which loved ones were murdered in the most atrocious manner. I think we can all understand with that sentiment that, of course, there are some brave souls who are willing to turn over a new leaf in their homes, but for other people, they can't. And they're using the phrase of a violation of space, not just a personhood, but a space violation, actual physical place has been violated, and it leaves a stain, kind of a spiritual residue. So there's a lot of looking ahead that's been taking place. A lot of consideration has gone into what to do, and they're taking brave steps towards actually demolishing those affected homes and then rebuilding. But the actual area that we went to just a few days ago for foundation stone laying was, interestingly, it was a new neighborhood that was planned before October. It had been in the works for some time. So interesting timing that this is now going ahead, and they're going to go ahead with it. They're not going to be put off by what happened. They're taking the courage to go ahead and trust that the right people are going to come to help them rebuild this community.
Mm. Was there a special ceremony that they'd done, and was this a moving experience?
Yes, it was. We'd been a few times, and it's hard not to feel the heaviness in the air, and the heaviness doesn't even come close. I actually can't find the right word to describe how it felt being there, especially in the immediate months afterwards. It's like going to a death camp in Europe, just somewhere where a terrible atrocities taken place. And also they put up posters on many of the homes with a photograph of the person that used to live there, or family. Some of them that was, you know, mother, father, several children, babies, you know, that are no more, and telling you their names. Their names are also extremely important. It's not just numbers, you know, so many people died. It's real names, real faces, real people, real lives that were extinguished in an insufferable way, and they're honouring these people's memories. But this time felt different going there a few days ago. It was infused with hope, and a lot of the people that we saw there, many residents of the kibbutz were there, and people from outside that came, well-wishers that were there to support it. And people had smiles on their faces, and they had lovely refreshments, they had speeches, and then at some point some cement was put down into a foundational spot, and it was just looking ahead and looking forward, and they'd drawn up beautiful plans as well for how to rebuild some of what was lost, and to including some of the infrastructure. Many of the educational facilities have been lost at the kibbutz where the children were taught. So it's very difficult to get anywhere back to normal life when there's no educational facilities for the children, because these kibbutzim are founded on family life. Essentially, the kibbutz is like one big family. In the West, I think we've lost a lot of the idea of what that feels like. Perhaps villages, country villages, is the nearest we can get to that feeling of communal life that goes really, really deep, especially in an age where people live in apartment blocks and don't even know who their next door neighbours are. That's not a judgment, it's just a sad reality in many cases. But in the kibbutzim, in the moshavim, there's close relationships with neighbours beyond the family unit, and it's a beautiful thing. It's somewhere between friends and family, and so they're looking to rebuild that, and not just to rebuild places, but to rebuild a community and to shape a community. And that's a whole different skill that's needed.
I imagine a lot of them have got tragic stories, and a lot of them actually knew other people who've been killed and are not here anymore.
That's right. It's like it's a member of their own family, and there's just been so many funerals. You know, the friends that we had that we visited said that they just had one funeral after another. Some people have had multiple funerals in the same day, and nobody there's experienced anything like it before. And yet somewhere in all of that grief, they are managing to find the stoicism and the hope to move forward and rebuild their community. And not just to take the people of the kibbutz, transplant them to an area perhaps further away from Gaza. No, they're doing it right there where they are. And that, I think that's also an ultimate statement of belief in what they're doing and who they are, and that they're called to be and flourish where they're planted by God, and not to run away and be scared and flee the territory, because this was part of the ancient, within the ancient borders of Israel. And it's where they've been planted, and it's where they need to be.
Have many of them came back to Kibbutz Be'eri?
They're trickling back. They initially, the whole kibbutz, like with some of the other kibbutzim there, Kibbutz Aza and several of the other ones, that it was impossible to return because they were taken, they were kind of a military presence in the kibbutz, so it wasn't possible to go in. But that has been gradually changing. One of the amazing things for Kibbutz Be'eri, which has really, so we were told by residents, has been a real turning point, has been their printing factory that they've got in the kibbutz. They've got an amazing print works there that prints many of the bank cards and plastic ID cards, driving licenses that are used in Israel. It seems that most of them come from that factory in Kibbutz Be'eri. In fact, we knew people, everybody seemed to know someone in October, November time who was due a renewal of their bank card and never got it and couldn't transact because it was all from Be'eri. But do you know, we were told that that factory, it was only about a week out of action before it reopened. And there was just, and they explained to us, they had so many orders and so many, their contractors were very understanding. But the truth was is that they needed the product. And if they weren't able to supply it, they would be forced to go elsewhere. So they managed to rally folks together. And a lot of the people that work in that factory are from other kibbutzim and other communities, including the Bedouin city that's not too far away. There's also many Arabs that work in there or that have come across, and they needed to keep working. So they were able to reopen, and it's been wonderful that they've managed to keep going. And that factory and the need to be close to work has helped to rally people around and helped people to kind of get back to some semblance of normality with their daily work routine. And so people have been moving back. It's been harder for, like as I said, with the families with young children to move back because of the lack of the educational facilities. So that's what they're really honing in on now, is to raise funds. They're looking to raise quite a serious amount of money to restore what was lost and to build new classrooms and new medical centre, new dental centre, things that have been destroyed that they need to replace. So, yeah, they're going ahead with their plans, and it was really inspiring to see. And we told them how inspiring they were in the face of such adversity, kicked down, ground down into the dust, somehow picking themselves up again and moving forward.
Over 100 people were killed at Kibbutz Be'eri. Are there many people hostages today in Gaza, taken from Kibbutz Be'eri?
Sadly, that is true. There's, because of the difficulty of, you know, the Red Cross, Red Crescent, were never allowed in to check on the hostages, and, you know, all of that was out of the window. So it's not really been known who's alive and who's dead and who was missing and never actually was taken into Gaza. It was so much confusion. But it seems that there's around 10 that are still not accounted for, that believed to be hostage in the Gaza Strip. And as they told us, and they told us this just the other day and also before, that, and probably anyone listening to this may have heard this same phrase, that for those families and also the wider communities, the calendar still says October the 7th for them. They've not been able to go back to normal. They've not been able to move on with their lives. They're frozen in time until they know what's happened to their loved ones. How can they go back to normal? What does normal look like when a husband or a son or a wife, daughter, a grandchild is not at the table and nobody knows where they are? Nobody knows if they're alive or dead. Nobody knows if they're being tortured. They can't move on until they know what's happened. So yeah, they still speak of life before October 7th and life after October the 7th. The two are so completely different, they're never the twain. So we are still hoping and praying, obviously, that these unaccounted people are located and found. And the recent rescue of hostages just a few weeks ago keeps hope alive that there may yet be more that are rescued, even in the face of something that looks impossible. Miracles can still happen.
I imagine after laying this foundation stone, it's a resilience of the residents and determined not to let Hamas win.
That's right. They're very much aware of their actions. And if they're just to pack up the kibbutz and what go home, where's home supposed to be? They have no other home. Their whole life is there. Everything is there. For many of them, their families are there. A gent that I spoke to, his grandparents moved there in the 1950s, and his parents were born, you know, and they grew up there, and then he was born, and with his brother, and sadly, his brother was murdered on October the 7th. But you know, they have no other home. There's nowhere else for these people to go. That is their home, and it would be the ultimate defeat for them to abandon the kibbutz now, and they can't. They're financially invested there, their homes were there, all their worldly livelihood, also their jobs for many of them. So they are rebuilding, and they're cognizant that in doing so, that this is also making a statement that they will keep on. Like the Jewish people are often likened to the olive trees, that though they may be pollarded, though they may be felled or cut down to a stump, and yet even after the passage of some time, that olive tree will keep throwing up new shoots again and again and again. And even if the animals eat the shoots and they're knocked down again or they're plucked off for firewood, and yet they keep shooting up from the base. And this is a good analogy for the Jewish people, because they're not easily destroyed. They have a flicker of hope and light within them, and the hand of God is helping them to look ahead and to look up.
How close is Kibbutz Be'eri from the Gaza border?
It's very close. If you go to Kibbutz Aza, not far away, you can look straight across from one side of the kibbutz into buildings in Gaza City. Kibbutz Be'eri is not quite as close. You don't see it quite as closely as that, but it's, as the crow flies, it's very close. So there really wasn't far to travel. And you can also hear noises from the Gaza Strip in Kibbutz Be'eri. So it's very close indeed. So these are very brave people to continue to rebuild against the backdrop of a very nearby populous city, which is, as sadly, there's been so much hatred coming over. Certainly that happened in October. And what is important for all of us to understand is that the people that live in Kibbutz Be'eri and the people that live in these other southern kibbutzim are generally not people who have been hostile to the people that live in the Gaza Strip. Most of them are very, very liberal in their views, and most of them are what used to be called peaceniks, some of them. They're the people who fundamentally believe in peace and living in harmony side by side with their neighbours. And we know personally, and perhaps you do have heard too, of people in this kibbutz, and not only in Be'eri, but they're personally giving financial support to people in the Gaza Strip. Certainly one family that we know, several families that we've heard of have been doing so. And it's been reported quite rightly that they were long-term support being passed across and friendships that were made. There were people in Gaza City that were employed in the southern kibbutzim and would come over for their employment. And sadly, this very belief in coexistence and friendship was the thing that was used to bring such an awful atrocity, and the trust was sadly abused in some quarters, and with the information that was passed back and put into the wrong hands. So, you know, we think of Vivian Silver, who was one of the more well-known residents of the kibbutz and had worked tirelessly for decades in the pursuit of peace and friendship with the people in Gaza. And sadly, she was slaughtered, like many others, on October the 7th.
You're from Christian Friends of Israel. Are the residents seeing the love and the support of Christians as you go down there?
Yes, I believe so. I do hope so. It was very, very important to us to let them know that they also have non-Jewish friends who are standing with them, praying for them, supporting them practically and financially. We also sent donation towards a new electrical appliances, washing machines, ovens and fridge freezers for the new temporary accommodations that are being put out very soon for people to move back to, because there's still people living in hotels, not only from Kibbutz Be'eri, but from other kibbutzim. Even after all these months, can you imagine being in a hotel room all this time and how terrible, awkward that must be? Is for people, especially with children, young children or very elderly people. It's all ages. It's like living in limbo land, being suspended in aspic for months on end, not being able to continue with normal life. And so even moving into the temporary residences, kind of before the new homes are built, on the land of the kibbutz will be a big step forward. So helping them with electrical appliances is one way that we've been able to assist, just in a practical way, but also with just going there when we can, smiles, warm embraces, telling them that there's people in the nations that are praying for them and supporting them and haven't forgotten them. This is all, I think, very meaningful for people there, because they see the hatred in the news. You know, it used to be on the radio, and then at some point these events were on television. Now, the outpouring of hatred in the world is in the palms of people's hands in their smartphones. And yes, a lot of people are looking at it every day. We think of the terrible protests that have happened almost immediately after the 7th of October. I mean, almost straight away, there were protests against Israel that were happening all over the world. People burning Israeli flags and chanting from the river to the sea, which is actually a war cry for genocide. And more recently, there's been all these ghastly so-called protests at American universities, and people see that hatred, and they wonder why, you know, why these people in these faraway countries, why they hate them so much, you know, what did they do? And they don't fundamentally understand who these people are and what they represent at all. They're completely misrepresented in the media. These are wholesome, good people who are just trying to live a peaceable life, who love their families and their neighbors, and they don't deserve to be vilified and castigated in the media or by people across the world. But we want to speak out for what we think of as perhaps a silent majority that doesn't get media coverage because we're burning things in the publicly and chanting vicious things outside public offices, but the silent majority of people who actually would rather show love and would rather show care and would rather pray for people and for all the Christian people across the world who actually believe their Bibles and are standing with the Jewish people in this hour when they're still in such great need and such great peril. Because after all, it's not just the southern border where there's trouble, you know, there's also a threat on the northern border, which is very real. And it's such a small country, you know, it's only the size of Wales, or, you know, it can be fit into pretty much any one of the states multiple times over. Pick any state you want, you can fit it in multiple times. It's a very small strip of land. And so, yes, a long-winded answer to your question. It means a lot to them. So they've told us they really appreciate that these people actually care, people that they don't even know. The sense of aloneness in the world is very palpable. They really, really feel alone in the world. But to know that there's people that call themselves friends, but not only in word, but in deed, it brings a lot of solace.
What's your prayer for Kibbutz Be'eri?
Our prayer for Kibbutz Be'eri is manifold. We're praying that the hostages, of the remaining hostages that belong to that kibbutz, will be released, will be found and be found alive and well. We are standing in prayer that there'll be healing for the trauma that's happened to the people there. Some of the residents we met most of them, they've got just terrible, terrible traumas. I can't actually really relate to how that must feel, and I wouldn't claim to know how they're feeling. Some of them have lost almost everyone. So it will take time, and they will need, I think, a touch from God also to really heal those deep emotional wounds and traumas. And some of them that have escaped have been physically injured. Some of them with life-changing injuries. Some of them were raped. Some of them were, you know, had doesn't even bear thinking about. Some of them endured. So there's a lot of healing. So that's our prayer, for that the God of all comfort will be able to give that comfort where it's needed, you know, with healing in his wings. And also prayer for the future, that they, and as they're already doing, are having the take the steps of faith to rebuild. And the amazing thing is that they're looking to build it, that it'll be even more beautiful than it was before. And I love that even from something terrible, that they can have a vision of that something good can come, like they can get new beautiful spaces for the children to learn and make it as beautiful as it can be, in even with a backdrop of such devastation, and really turn it around.
What's your website for people who'd like to know more about the work that you do?
www.cfijerusalem.org, and just type in CFI Jerusalem into Google or your search engine, and CFI Jerusalem Facebook, you'll find our Facebook page, and that's really the place to go for all of our activities, and you'd be very welcome.
Okay, Tristan, thank you very much.
Paul, thank you. It's a pleasure to speak.
Thank you for joining us today. Pray that God will move by his mighty power in the Holy Land and bring his peace.